Right, I mentioned we would go back-to-back in hour number one, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We are joined right now by an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover Podcast and SI Boxing with Chris Mannix. We are talking Ruiz versus Joshua 2, Saturday, 3:45 p.m. Eastern on DAZN. Good friend of the program, Chris Mannix is my guest. Chris, what's up? How are you?
How do you follow the athlete, Jim, that's extremely comfortable and good on an air? That's a tough act to follow, man.
Yeah, but you are an extremely comfortable broadcaster, writer, and podcaster also on the air. And when you're done playing, you're going to walk off and do whatever you want. So you can do it. I got you. Listen, Chris, you're on the call for Ruiz Joshua 2 on Saturday. Before we get to the fight, which I love, exactly where in the world are you right now and what is the scene like?
I am in my hotel room in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. It's the location that was chosen by Anthony Joshua, who had pretty much total control over where the rematch would be by virtue of the initial contract. Saudi Arabia stepped up and made an offer north of $50 million, $50 million, to host this fight. And, you know, Anthony Joshua followed the money. What Saudi has done in the last 2 months has quite literally built a stadium, a 15 to 20,000 seat stadium, for this fight to take place. It's open air. The temperature is in the low to mid 70s right now in Saudi Arabia. I can't speak too much about the atmosphere. I think a lot of people are going to be coming in on visas on fight night. They expect about 4,000 to 5,000 British fans to be in attendance, but it certainly is a fascinating place to hold a big fight. And I think, no question, the biggest fight that we've ever seen in this region.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. Now, you and I spoke after the first fight. When you look back on that fight, Chris, what were your expectations for the fight going into it?
Oh, I thought that Joshua would just steamroll Andy Ruiz. I mean, Ruiz has been a good fighter throughout his career, but in his toughest test to date, he lost to Joseph Parker. It was a close fight, but he lost. He took that fight effectively on 5-6 weeks' notice. I didn't think he'd be too significant a threat, but Andy Ruiz showed a lot in that fight. And I think more than anything, Anthony Joshua showed weaknesses. I think he didn't buy Vladimir Klitschko in their fight in 2017. No shame there. Vladimir Klitschko is a terrific puncher. But he was also buckled early on in the fight against Alexander Povetkin. He's been hit, you know, pretty regularly. Doesn't fight like a traditional big man in the mold of a Lennox Lewis or a Vladimir Klitschko. So he's not perfect out there in the ring. And Andy Ruiz exposed a lot of that. And I think a lot of people are wondering what kind of adjustments Anthony Joshua is going to make.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. So really quickly then, when you look back on that right now, does that fight feel even more incredible, or does it feel like, you know what, it actually makes some sense?
You know, I guess it makes more sense in hindsight. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in the last few months talking to, you know, more people that have been around Andy Ruiz, not just his training staff, but, you know, people in his former promoter, Top Rank. I mean, they had him for a number of years, got him right out of the amateur ranks. And Andy Ruiz is a guy that has a pretty good amateur background. He only has that one loss. You know, Top Rank parted ways with him, not because they didn't believe in his talent, but because they didn't think he would ever take boxing as seriously as it needed to be. So, in hindsight, you can certainly see that Andy Ruiz was more viable than he initially was given credit for.
Chris Mannix is joining us. Now, you recently went to England and you sat down with Joshua. It's one thing to lose, but Joshua told you, quote, "I just had to deal with the pain and the issues of taking a loss against what people called a fat guy," end quote. How much do you think that Ruiz's physical appearance added to the pain of that loss?
Oh, I think it absolutely did. Look, fighters have different mentalities than media members. They know that appearances can be deceiving. And Anthony Joshua didn't go into that fight thinking Ruiz was, you know, the equivalent of a modern-day Butterbean. Like, he knew he was a real fighter. But I don't think that he took him as seriously as maybe he would have taken Jarrell Miller, the original opponent who had to back out after testing positive for banned substances less than 2 months before that fight. So I do think that Anthony Joshua saw Ruiz and saw a softer target in Ruiz, and the fact that he lost to him and has had to take such heated criticism. I mean, I wrote in the magazine this week, Jim, that, you know, like Anthony Joshua is the first fighter, and certainly the first heavyweight, to lose in the Twitter age. So not only did he lose to a guy that was viewed at as inferior in the same way that Mike Tyson did and Lennox Lewis did, but he had to deal with the barbs. And Anthony Joshua is a huge social media presence. He's got millions of followers on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube. I mean, he's everywhere on social media. So he not only had to deal with the loss, but every day, if you ever logged on to his accounts, having people say just a lot of stuff about him. And I think that stuck with him as well.
Chris Mannix is joining us. So, Chris, in the aftermath of that fight, there were so many different theories and attempts to explain what happened to Joshua. Like, he just wasn't focused. He's overrated. He even had a panic attack. What do you make of all those theories?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that. I don't believe he had a panic attack. I've spoken to a number of people about that, and that seems like it's more just sort of internet-driven gossip. Is he overrated? I don't really believe that either, because prior to this, it wasn't like he was a guy that was a paper champion. I mean, he had wins over the likes of Dillian White, of course, Vladimir Klitschko. Joseph Parker was an undefeated champion when he faced Joshua, so he had some significant wins leading into that fight. I just think he had a really bad night, and could that night be duplicated? I mean, Joshua said to me, you know, maybe it's possible that Ruiz has his number. I think that's possible, but I think it's equally possible, if not more likely, that this fight, the first fight, goes down just like, you know, Lewis versus Rahman. Remember, in that fight back in 2001, Lewis avenged that loss just months later in a spectacular knockout. Vladimir Klitschko himself lost to a guy named Lehman Brewster, was knocked out, and a year or so later, he beat Brewster in a rematch, knocking him out. So I think that history shows that a guy can have a bad night and rebound spectacularly. And there are a lot of people around Anthony Joshua that firmly believe that's going
to
happen.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. There is a history of guys pulling off stunning upsets in boxing and then not winning that rematch. Now, you were with Ruiz in the fighter meetings about 24 hours ago. He was there rocking a Knicks jersey. What was your sense of his mindset and his mood right now?
I mean, it's funny, Jim. Like, Andy Ruiz, even though he's got the titles, still looks like that kind of fan off the street that pays money to take a picture with the heavyweight champion. I mean, seeing them at the press conference, I mean, Ruiz has got that, you know, big Derrick Rose jersey that he bought on the day of the first fight, and he wore it to the post-fight press conference. He doesn't look like a real fighter, certainly not standing next to the Greek god that is Anthony Joshua, but, you know, clearly he is. Now, you asked about the mindset. I think it's a good question, and I don't think it's one we can fully answer until after the fight. I have my doubts that he's as sort of hungry for this fight as he was for the first one. As I mentioned, you know, talking to his former promoter, one thing that comes back to me a lot is that time has never been the friend of Andy Ruiz. When he's been active, he's been able to stay sharp, stay relatively in shape, stay focused. But when he takes time off, has longer layoffs, that tends to be problematic for him. It tends to keep him out of the gym and less focused. So right now, they're saying all the right things. He talked to his trainer, Manny Robles, says he's been in training camp for like 3 months. Dr. Andy, he's just as hungry, just as focused as the last time. But he's been celebrated in his hometown. He's been built up and praised like never before. He came into the fighter meetings wearing like clearly new jewelry, new ring, new necklace. He probably had $100,000 around his neck and on his fingers, you know, going into that meeting. So I do wonder if, you know, all this, all the trappings of success may have cost him a little bit of something, and if it did, that could significantly change the fight.
We're going to find out this weekend. All right, before I let you go, I've got to hit you with a quick basketball question. You recently weighed in on whether James Harden is the best scorer in NBA history. How do you go about answering that question, Chris?
It's so subjective, and, you know, look, do I believe that Michael Jordan, if you dropped him into today's game with today's rules, where you can't manhandle him like, you know, the Pistons and the Knicks and all those teams did back in the 1990s, I think he'd be putting up James Harden-like numbers. But the fact is, we can't do that. We can't just put Jordan in today's game. In today's game, in today's rules, James Harden is the most unstoppable offensive player that I've ever seen. He's incredible with his body control. He's incredible with the three-point shot. And he does things. One of the reasons I tilt towards yes with this answer is that he does things oftentimes with the entirety of an opposing defense aimed at him. I mean, you talk to rival coaches, especially the last couple of years when Harden hasn't had as much offensive support as maybe he has this year with Russell Westbrook. They just gear their entire defense toward him. He's looking at one guy. He's got two guys behind that guy designed there to stop him from dribble penetration, and he still gets to the hole, and he still makes plays. And that, to me, is nothing short of remarkable. So I think he has a very strong argument to be called the greatest scorer in NBA history.
All right, so quickly, in today's game, with today's rules, if you're a defense, how do you go about trying to stop him or at least limiting his impact?
I wish I knew. I mean, he's so comfortable from three. When he gets to the basket, the way he uses that body and extends his arms, he's almost guaranteed to get to the free throw line. He's averaging 14 free throws per game this year, Jim. It's incredible. That's a career high for James Harden. I just think you have to try to force him into a mid-range game. And because the mid-range shot, as we know, the least efficient shot in basketball, if you can force him to long twos, great. He's probably still going to make them, but that's the best you can do.
Once again, Ruiz, Joshua 2, Saturday, 3:45 p.m. Eastern on DAZN. He's an NBA writer for SI, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, and a boxing analyst for DAZN, and hosts a couple of podcasts as well. Chris Mannix, my guest. Chris, great job. You see, I knew there was no issue with you following a guy who's comfortable, who can walk off the field and do whatever he wants when he's done. Great job, Chris. Have a great weekend.
You got it, Jim. Thanks.
My man, Chris Mannix. All right, so you've got the rematch. Ruiz, Joshua, 2. It's so true. If you look at these two guys standing next to each other, they could not look any more different. And if you're Joshua, one thing to lose, but to lose to, quote, a fat guy, whether that's legit or not. I mean, Ruiz is not exactly a Greek god, but he is skilled and he is dangerous. And to me, once again, I've said this before about boxing. There is no such thing as a lucky punch in boxing. There's just not. If you land it, you deserve it. You get credit for it.